In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's talk movies. It's Pass the Popcorn. Alan Adams of The Main Edge here with us in studio with pants. Hello, sir.
Yes, I am wearing pants. I will say, had I not been working all day, there's a very real chance that the shorts would have happened.
But 60s on Wednesday, but I was wondering earlier, are you the kind of person that when you make that commitment to shorts, you're not going back?
See, that's the thing.
Yeah.
There was one day, I don't remember if it was earlier this month or maybe the tail end of January, where it got up into sort of like the 50s, and it's just like, am I going to do this? Because, you know, I am nothing if not a man of my word, Rich. And, you know, when I commit, I commit.
Yes.
And considering what's supposed to happen after Wednesday, I think maybe we hold off on going shorts for a little while longer.
Yeah. We were chatting about it during the break. Abby and I had a wonderful time last night at the Bangor Opera House Penobscot Theater, watching you and your cohorts doing some improv last night in Ready, Set, Go. What a blast that was.
It was a hoot. You know, like we really had a good time. We mixed it up a little bit. We had done a different sort of format the previous two outings. We changed things up a little bit in a way that I thought was really pretty great. Like we certainly had fun out there. Like, it's always great to work with Jen and Lawrence and with Dennis. And one of the joys of this particular sort of situation is each time I've done a show, this was our third one, I've done a show with someone that I have literally met that day. There was a woman by the name of Shelby Burton who was also part of our cadre. I had literally never met her before 4 o'clock that afternoon. And so, you know, it's just one of those things where it's just like, you know, you have that sort of introductory is like, where are your lines? Like, is it okay if I touch you? Like, you know, stuff like that.
Sure.
But yeah, she was great. Like, everybody was great. Like, it's just fun to be up there and be along for the ride.
It was fun. You guys used the set for Maytag Virgin very well. That provided some great opportunities, especially for you and Dennis to change characters many times.
It's such a fantastic set. And just, you know, all that aside, like if you have not had a chance to check out Maytag Virgin, I believe you have one weekend left. You can see that glorious set as well as a wonderful show taking place on it. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's something really great about this sort of concept, this creation, this improvising a play on a pre-existing set that I don't know, like scratches, like it's basically in the center of the Venn diagram of my interests. so it's really nice to have the opportunity to do something like this, and it'll be interesting for the next one because I'm in the next show,
right.
So
right.
So it's going to be really interesting to see how Ready, Set, Go goes. You know, after doing a matinee earlier that day. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
It'll be fine.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Let's talk movies, though. Three this week, Uncharted, Dog. I'm tearing up thinking about you talking about Dog, and then Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Where do we begin?
We'll start with that last one. So there's been an interesting trend in horror movies specifically in the last few years, this idea of, you know, because everything's got to be a franchise, you've got to build on these series, and, you know, back in the day, like horror movies, they were kind of the OG as far as like franchise building, because, you know, you had a successful slasher flick, and then a series of, you know, diminishing return sequels until they wrung every last nickel out of the concept, and then they tossed it in the bin and moved on. Well, we don't do that anymore. I mean, we still wring every nickel out, but nothing gets tossed in the bin, at least not forever. But what this movie tries to do is what David Gordon Green has done, I think, pretty successfully with the Halloween franchise, which is basically, it's like, oh yeah, you remember all those sequels to that first movie? They didn't happen. Yep, nope, not a thing anymore. And so this new movie, which is streaming on Netflix, is a direct sequel to that, to Tobe Hooper's 1973 Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So all the nonsense that happened in the interim, that is no longer canonical, which is great. Like, I mean, I think there's a lot of appeal to the idea of creating a clean slate, particularly when you have the sort of convoluted mythologies that can spring up when you're doing multiple sequels from different filmmakers, different production companies. Like, the ideas get spread so thin that it's tough to keep track. And so if you can just sort of slice through that Gordian knot, or chainsaw through it, as the case may be, you get a chance to start over. That's great. Unless you don't actually do anything interesting when you do it.
Oh,
and that's kind of the issue with this one. It's the sort of movie that I think wants you to think it's about something a little more sophisticated, but they just pay lip service to those ideas, and it basically just turns into a slasher movie that's plenty gory, but it's just not all that scary. The basic conceit is it's 50 years after the original, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We're returning to the area in which it happened. The sole survivor of that event still lives in the town and has been hunting Leatherface ever since the events of that fateful night, whatever. But we have this group of four people, young people from it's never explicitly said, but I assume they're from Austin. They're moving. They're coming to this abandoned ghost town in it's called Harlow, and they're basically buying it up, and they're going to auction it off and gentrify it into, you know, basically a Gen Z hipster paradise. That's their big plan. They're you know, with influencers and entrepreneurs and blah 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 blah. Just very. A very surface level understanding of an entire generation, which is exactly what you want from your horror movies. And of course, one of them, and this is the, like, I'll just get this out of the way because I found it very distasteful. This quartet is a survivor of a school shooting. And that's just sort of tossed in there for reasons that, I mean, ostensibly apply to the plot, but are completely unnecessary. It just felt gross. You know what I mean? Yep. It's just like, and I understand that these are exploitation movies. That's what slasher movies are all about. But I don't know, like, you don't need it, and so why? Like, so that was a little icky. But anyway, so you have this crew of four. You'll notice I haven't noticed any. I've noted no character names and no actor names because I remember neither. honestly, you don't need to know, because you're not going to care one whit about any of these people or anything that happens to them. Anyway, they show up in the town. They meet the hillbilly contractor who they've hired to fix things up. And then they go into the old orphanage, and it turns out someone's still living there. And they're like, you got to get out. And the woman has a sort of a medical event. Winds up getting carried out by, turns out there's one person still living in the orphanage with her, this gigantic hulking guy who doesn't talk. He carries her out into the police van so they can take her to the hospital or whatever. Things go awry, and I'm not spoiling it. A big hulking guy who doesn't talk, yeah, it's Leatherface. Like, it's definitely Leatherface.
What?
And in case you don't get that, there's a moment very, very quickly after he's introduced where it's made pretty clear that he is, in fact, Leatherface. And then he comes back to the town and wrecks havoc on all of the on these people who came in, as well as the folks who came in on the party bus for the auction, because there's an auction, of course.
Right.
And so you have all these other people partying and drinking on a bus, and frankly, in easily the best scene of the movie. At one point, you know who else gets on the party bus?
Leatherface. Yeah, baby.
And it gets real. And then there's just a lot of chopping and breaking and blooding, and it's fine if you're into that sort of thing. If the gore is what attracts you to these movies, and I know there are some people who that's their deal. It's very present, but there are no surprises. Like, there's nothing unexpected that happens here, and you're just like, you just find yourself wondering, I just kind of, what's the point?
Leatherface would have to be like in his 70s, right?
Oh, the timeline issues are a whole different conversation.
Yeah
like there are some real logistical issues.
But Grandpa had some age on him in the original, so, you know, maybe it's just a long-lived family.
And Gunnar Hansen died, right?
Yeah, no, it is not Gunnar Hansen. Yeah. If Gunnar Hansen had been in this, we would have. That's literally all we would have talked about.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know. It's just one of those movies where, you know, and I'm not a particular fan of the franchise. Not necessarily as far as slashers go. I think I'm a when it comes right down to it, I'm probably a Halloween guy, maybe a Friday the 13th guy. But I was always sort of I always found the story at least had some compelling aspects to it. But there's just none of that here. It just feels very very soulless, very empty.
All right, that's a one down. What's next?
Let's talk about Uncharted, because I'm gonna, you already alluded to how emotional we're gonna get here. Yes. When we talk about the other one. So Uncharted, the history of video game movies is checkered.
Mm.
We'll say checkered. Some of them have had gone on to some financial success, but very few of them have achieved anything remotely resembling like legitimate quality as far as being movies. And so you're always a little leery when you're going into something. And this movie, it does have some things going for it. Tom Holland stars. It's based on a wildly successful video game franchise. Like I've never played an Uncharted game, but I know people who devoted significant chunks of their time to iterations of this game. Mostly, 10 years or so ago. Mm. Like that was when I think it was really at its peak. Which is also, when this movie first went into development, if that gives you any idea.
Oh, dear.
That's the other thing. Video game movies, checkered history of success. Movies that take over 10 years to get developed, also a checkered history. this movie has been in development so long that Mark Wahlberg, who plays sort of the older sort of mentor figure, was actually in talks to play the lead, 12 years ago,
right,
or something like that. So it's that kind of situation. The ultimate result with this movie, it really is kind of a shoulder shrug of a movie.
Sure.
It's not helped by the fact that the game was very much inspired by and at times derivative of Indiana Jones. If you'd never seen an Indiana Jones movie, Uncharted's going to blow your mind. If you have seen an Indiana Jones movie, then you've seen Uncharted.
Oh, dear.
The basic gist, Tom Holland plays a guy named Nathan Drake. He was separated from his brother when they were teenagers. They both share a fascination with the lost treasure of Magellan, because that's a thing that teenagers are into.
Sure.
His brother has to run away due to law enforcement issues. Tom Holland grows up, becomes a bartender in New York City, small-time petty thief. That's when Victor Sully Sullivan, played by Mark Wahlberg in the most Mark Wahlbergian character name ever, shows up. He's a treasure hunter. He's like, I need you to join my team. We're going to go find Magellan's treasure. Tom Holland's, he's like, I don't know you. And Mark Wahlberg's, I know your brother. So, oh, okay. And then he's on the team. They go to an auction where they meet evil Antonio Banderas, whose family has a blood claim to the treasure or something. Look, I know I sound like a crazy person right now, but the plot to this movie is so convoluted and it's difficult to articulate just exactly how it works. Anyway, they show up at an auction. We meet some of the other characters. We meet Antonio Banderas. We meet one of Sully's old mercenary buddies. And then we're off globetrotting around, solving puzzles and engaging in chases and hand-to-hand combat and stuff. Like, there are lines that allude to Indiana Jones movies, including a couple that are actually quite funny. At one point, Tom Holland utters the phrase, nuns. Why did there have to be nuns? which is on its face hilarious. And also, they travel by map. Like, with the image of the plane and the red lines. Like, they do that. But that's kind of the problem. Like, it feels very derivative. It's a perfectly well-made movie. The plot doesn't make sense, especially, like, the third act just falls apart and a lot of stuff happens that just makes no sense, either by the rules of logic, by the laws of physics. Like, none of it makes sense. However, Tom Holland's really good. Like, and he's really good in this kind of movie. It's got that sort of combo. It requires a combination of physical prowess and sort of quick-witted, like, quippiness that I think very few actors are capable of. And he's got that quality. He's got those qualities in spades. Like, he's a very talented physical actor, you know, and so is capable of all that, the stunty, like, parkour-y type stuff that's very in vogue right now. But he's got talent. So he's able to sort of engage on that sort of banter level that you need from this sort of action movie. Like I said, he's really the reason. He's basically the reason it's not a complete garbage fire, because his performance is really pretty engaging. Everybody else is fine. Like, I don't hate on Wahlberg like a lot of people do, but he, you know, this movie doesn't ask a lot of him, and he really just meets that bar. You know, Antonio Banderas, I wish Antonio Banderas was having more fun, because it's like evil billionaire Antonio Banderas, like, give it to me. And he just, I don't know, just feel like he's counting his money. And and the rest of the ensemble is forgettable enough that I don't remember any of their names or a lot about what they did. You know, if you're someone who was like, you know, I'd love to see a new Indiana Jones movie, but like 25% worse, then Uncharted might be for you.
Right. And finally, dog. Oh, man.
You know, like, put a dog in a movie and I'm here for it. Like, especially like if it's a movie like that where the dog is like a featured like character. Like, I'm ready. And, you know, and I don't care what happens to any of the people.
No.
Whatever happens, they do not matter. But that dog needs to have a happy life, needs to have a safe journey throughout. And if anything bad happens to the dog, I get angry. we're going to say, because I'm gonna heap a fair amount of praise on Channing Tatum throughout the course of this conversation. But I'm going to start by saying kudos to Channing Tatum for going on every talk show that will listen and being like, nothing bad happens to the dog.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, and it's such a silly thing, but at the same time, and you could argue that it's a spoiler or whatever, but it's like, I'm not here to see something bad happen to a dog. And I think most people aren't. And so, you know, and when your movie is literally titled Dog, like, we're going to have some concerns, particularly when you hear what the movie is about. The basic gist is Channing Tatum plays a former U.S. Army Ranger named Jackson Briggs. He's out of the service. He's dealing with a traumatic brain injury, and so he's been discharged. But he's trying to get hired by a private security firm, but he can't. He needs clearance from his former commanding officer to get that to be able to get hired. So the opportunity arises in an unfortunate circumstance. One of his former platoon mates passes away. And so they go and they all meet up at a bar and they do this sort of celebration of life. They drink, they reminisce, et cetera, et cetera. And his former captain is there. And so he's able to speak to his captain and be like, I need you to contact this company and say that I'm okay to go. And the captain says, well, okay, you just got to do one thing for me. And it turns out that the deceased was a dog handler. And so his dog, a dog named Lulu, a lovely Belgian Malinois, is his deceased friend's family would like the dog to be at the funeral. Like, that's their request. The dog's been retired from service, suffering from PTSD and a number of other of issues. And so basically the deal is, all right, man, take the dog to Arizona. They're in the Pacific Northwest somewhere. Take the dog to Arizona for the funeral in time for the funeral. And I'll write you the letter that you need. And, you know, and we'll do this. And so that's kind of it. Like, he gathers up the dog, who is very reticent to go to deal with anyone who's not her handler.
Right.
And, you know, and they, you know, they put her in the back of the truck and away they go. And we watch as, you know, there are a couple, some vignettes that, you know, that you have to have because otherwise it's just, you know, Channing Tatum and a dog in a pickup truck for an hour and a half. But that, you know, he meets some like sex hippies in Portland and winds up, on a random like secret marijuana farm at one point, like just hijinks. There are hijinks sure. along the way. But as, you know, as the time passes, you watch as, you know, these sort of two broken creatures kind of find ways to help one another heal. Like not necessarily, you know, purposefully, but just, that's just how these things go. Mm-hmm. And, look, I mean, you know me. Like, I cried several times during this movie. Like, just like there's just something about the connection between a person and a dog that is, I don't know, there's a purity to it, I guess, is as good a way of expressing it as anything. But it's just like, you know, when that connection happens, it's just, it's really lovely to watch. And frankly, like, good work out of Channing Tatum, you know, like, I mean, who is, let's be honest, kind of like, I mean, he's the human version of a Labrador Retriever or something like that. Like he's like, he has that sort of energy. And so the connection that he's making with this animal is very apparent on screen. He also co-directed the movie. It's his, it's his sort of feature debut. He co-directed it with a fellow by the name of, Reed Carolyn, is the guy's name. Who is also making his directorial debut. But the two of them met working with Steven Soderbergh on Magic Mike and subsequent projects. Carolyn's a screenwriter and producer. And so that's where their connection comes. And honestly, like, and, you know, we'll pump the brakes. I'm not making any grand comparisons here. But I will say it seems clear that Channing Tatum was paying attention watching Steven Soderbergh work. Like it's like, this is a very well-made movie. Like it's, and it's an original story. This is not based on pre-existing material. Right. And you know, and it made its budget back this weekend at the box office.
Well, there you go.
You know, and it's one of those things where it's like, come on, like we need more movies like this. Like I'm all for the franchise IP explosion extravaganzas. But these are the movies that I think really power the American cinematic scene. And to have a movie like this come exclusively in theaters and turn a profit, particularly against a big budget release like Uncharted,
yep.
like that's a big deal. And this movie's really good. Like, I mean, I don't need to tell you that because all dogs are good dogs.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to it. And it's a real dog. It's not a CGI dog,
yep.
right?
Yep, absolutely. And really a very, very sweet dog it's just the best parts of the movie are just Channing Tatum and the dog like talking to the dog while they're sitting in the truck or on the hood or just out in a field somewhere, and it's just like, yeah, I feel you, Channing.
There you go. All right, thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, Main Edge with movie reviews.